Hi, welcome back everybody. It's been a long time. We haven't filmed one of these for quite some time, so I'm super excited to be back. And I'm really excited to introduce you to our guest today, Mr. Ben Nichols, and AKA the Paddle PR, the PR pro. And I'm going to actually, in true Paddle Star style, throw it over to him so he can introduce himself and give us a quick whirlwind of everything that you're involved in, which we know is a lot. And then we'll kind of hone in on the detail. So over to you, Ben. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jeevan, for having me on. So, Ben Nichols, I've been working in sports marketing and PR for about 20 years. Been lucky enough to work in the likes of Formula One, heading up media for the World Anti-Doping Agency for a while, worked as press officer of the Dubai Tennis Championships, and then 3 years ago found my calling in paddle. I grew up playing squash and tennis, and obviously I've been working for 20 years on the storytelling side of the sport, and saw a great opportunity to help grow Brand Paddle and be on a mission to help expose the sport to as many people as possible and show it as the, you know, the hottest sporting property worldwide.
And you are certainly doing that. And have you now made the full-time jump just purely into paddle?
It very quickly became a full-time jump, and it was a jump because I started off in 2022, and that, as we know in the UK, it's, you know, still seen as a somewhat niche sport, but back then it was super niche. And I had two questions I asked myself. One, is it too early to be getting involved in this? And two, is it too niche? And I think I answered those questions by just doubling down on it and seeing the opportunity and thinking about where the sport's going to go in the future, how big this is going to be, and the potential of, you know, interest across the world. And so, yeah, I've been working on the storytelling side with clubs, with the pro side, with players, with tech brands, you name it. And I think the sky's the limit for paddle.
Yeah. And out of sort of all your past experiences in the PR world, like you mentioned Formula One there, what are you able to sort of draw on sort of areas of expertise or from more established sports in this new market space now?
I think it's hugely helpful. I've now become fully paddle, but yeah. I come from a different outside world. So I've been able to bring all those perspectives of mainstream sports that have much bigger attention and take the learnings of what they do well and what they don't do well into essentially what is a new sport for us. And, you know, in a country like the UK, we're seeing this as like a very kind of novel product and phenomenon to play with. So yeah, I think, you know, Formula One, tennis, all of these sports have learned how to market, how to present themselves, how to work with players and sponsors, and for me to be able to, I suppose, take those learnings and also avoid some of those things that they've done badly in other sports. And I see it as a blank canvas with paddle. So it's all about like taking the good parts of other sports and coming up with new ideas, because it is a, yeah, like I say, it's a blank canvas to paint with.
Yeah, you sound like obviously really, really excited by what you're doing. So no regrets at like taking this leap into this bold new world.
No regrets. Look, it is, I won't lie, it's super hard, and it has been hard in the early days to do it. And I, yeah, coming back to those questions, is this too niche and is this too early to be getting into paddle? That they become less of a question because the industry's growing. So I think if you're half good at your job and you're growing with it and the industry's growing and you build a bit of a reputation, then it becomes self-fulfilling in that way. So yes, I think it's been tough. It was tough in the early days of thinking like we are, you know, knocking at this door of this sport that is one day going to be massive, but it is so small now. So when I'm dealing with media, how do we get their interest? How do we get them paying attention to this, you know, sport that's en route but isn't yet at its destination? And it's been, you know, it's been hard work. You've had to be creative. You've had to tell people, you know, whether that's journalists, sponsors, different stakeholders, why this is the next big thing, why they should listen to you, why they should listen to the businesses you're representing. And it takes, you know, perseverance. It takes, like I say, creativity. It takes thinking outside the box. And it takes, real dedication and passion for it. I couldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in it.
Yeah. And do you feel like when you are talking to all these different stakeholders, did they kind of jump on the bandwagon at the speed that you wanted them to, or has it been quite challenging?
Challenging in the early days, for sure. So I'm thinking about the stakeholders I had to deal with to do my job. So absolutely number one is journalists. There's a story that's been out there, you know, the world's fastest growing sport, this new trend. When that story's been told, and I think it has been told in the UK by and large by most outlets, what's the next iteration? Is it, you know, the celebrities getting involved? Is it about the stats and the numbers we see from, you know, the likes of Playtomic around this boom? Is it what's happening at the kind of community grassroots level? Is it, you know, women's sport? What are the different angles that make this appealing to a to media outlets. So it's always been like thinking outside the box. And yes, you know, a lot of the time, I think less so now, but certainly in the first year or two, you're falling on deaf ears of you know, journalists and stakeholders thinking, we know about Padel, we're interested, but it's not Premier League football. So to convince them that, you know, they should be following this story and they should be getting involved and having this, you know, chance to jump into the sport early on to show that they are, you know, I suppose, thinking like prophetically, thinking about what's in the future. That's good for them as well. I say that to journalists, like they always want to be ahead of the curve and breaking a story or thinking about what's coming down the track. So if they can be the ones that, you know, you can influence them to understand that, that's a great job well done. So to answer your question, like, yeah, super hard in the early days, but I was like deep down very convinced that this was and is the big sporting story of our time. And I think, you know, I see that I'm more and more convinced, you know, every week. I think this is not just a trend. This is here to stay.
There's definitely something sort of electrifying in the space. It's like fast moving and super exciting. And anyone I know in the space, that's kind of the sort of energy, I think, that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the energy you need. And hopefully I show that. I certainly feel it. And I try and like impart that to my team members, to those I'm working with. I try and not just, you know, empty hype. I'm like, you know, there's numbers that back up where this sport is going. There's figures getting involved, you know, high profile figures from sports, from music, from the arts who are playing this sport. I've not seen anything like that in my lifetime. I think it's absolutely kind of unique in that way. I've not seen any other sport. I've certainly not grown up with one where people are getting involved and jumping on this train that is moving at a faster and faster speed. That's how I see it. And I, you know, personally speaking, I'm like, I won't get a chance like this again in my life.
Yeah.
I've done some interesting things before. Hopefully I will in the future, but I've got to kind of personally, you know, grasp it with two hands. I'm in a, you know, a hard-earned position, but a fortunate position to be building what I'm building and working with great people. And I want as many people as possible to share in that success and to like and to see the excitement around the sport.
Yeah.
It's amazing to play. It's an amazing story. There's great people involved and it's very international. And I think it's just quite unique in that way.
So obviously PR's sort of the art of storytelling. So how do you go about telling the story of Padel specifically to those? I mean, there's quite a lot of people still that do not know what Padel is.
And you have to pinch yourself. We all do, right? That it is a bubble. We think, oh, everyone knows Padel. No, they don't. The percentage is probably still very small in the UK.
I mean, I was at a wedding this weekend and I got asked, are you doing paddle boarding? And I was like,
I know, there's still the paddle boarding. Yeah. But look, it is great. It's a great kind of barometer of where it is in like British society in terms of when people, you know, unsolicited, they'll come up to you and then they'll start talking and then Padel will come up and you're like, okay, it's starting to get there now. You know, you haven't had to bring it up yourself. And I see that more and more, which is good. But I think, look, where is Padel? It's still got a long journey ahead. I think the percentage awareness has probably shifted a lot in the last year, which is good. I think, you know, how do we grow that? I think we grow it through media attention. We grow it through, you know, content creators, celebrities, you know, content online on Instagram and social media platforms. I think we do it. We kind of grow it through more courts, getting people on court. The more courts there are and people see in the street Padel courts, the more they'll be intrigued and think, I want to get on. So there's lots of ways of just growing the awareness and basically expanding the bubble. That's how I see it. So the more we can do along those lines, the better. And I think as soon, you know, my job, I feel, often stops when people step on the court because then they're hooked on it. And they don't need me to kind of convince or any rhetoric. They're sort of like, we get it. And we see the stats and we see the growth and we see who's playing. So it's kind of taking the horse to water and then let them drink.
And then obviously there is some negative press around Padel, more from a planning perspective about noise and about, you know, we're finding that when we're building sites, there's almost fear sometimes in communities that this Padel club is coming.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're in a position where you can sort of assist in educating people or, you know, changing the viewpoint?
I'm always going to be pro Padel.
Yeah.
So perfect example. My local club is it's a classic.
Because Winchester is one of those catchments.
Winchester, I know. There we go, name drop. So look, it's been all over the news, probably not for the right reasons for Padel.
Yeah.
It's a classic British tennis club that built squash and now has built Padel. It's built three Padel courts. They're so successful. They froze Padel membership for a while. There's a Padel committee who obviously is lobbying for more Padel. But there have been issues with local residents. You know, I understand it. There's people living right next door who never
was
had
it,
this.
Paddle sounds like the Battle of Somme.
The Battle of Somme. Like, I don't take that viewpoint, but I do understand if I was living next to it, maybe I'd be a bit more sympathetic to it. So look, I understand it from both angles. People didn't, you know, live there and then suddenly expect this really noisy, rowdy sport to come along. But at the same time, look, it's getting people off the sofa. It's getting people healthy, it's getting people socializing, it's so good for society in all those ways that we'll talk about. To me, that's the bigger picture. There's going to be some angry residents along the way. That probably is a separate issue, and that's partly the problem of building in tennis clubs and suburban tennis clubs that you wouldn't get in your indoor kind of warehouse venues. So, you know, without going down a track, I think, you know, if I was building paddle clubs, for sure, looking at indoor and looking at those non-residential, non-tennis venues, I think it's probably the bigger growth for the sport, because you're not going to face those issues and those kind of battles along the way. So there's different models of paddle clubs.
Yeah.
But you're going to have, there'll always be people to complain. Look at the US, where I do lots of work. Pickleball is the noisy, rowdy, you know, sort of, you know, chip off the
well
block.
I think it's the ball on the bat that causes a noise, not Definitely. The ball on the glass, which is the misconception.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I know they're doing things in the US where they're trying to I think I've heard about, like, you know, bats that are less noise reduction, noise cancelling. I mean, I don't know quite how they work, but it's obviously an issue, and people are obviously trying to, you know, look at it like pragmatically, like, okay, how can we grow pickleball without there being too many issues? Paddle, I think it's going to face some resistance in that way, like anything does. But in many ways, that means it's being successful, because it is growing and people are trying to bring it to clubs, and there's a need for it. So you're going to always face resistance, anything you're trying to grow.
Yeah.
But I'm always going to be on the pro paddle side of the argument, you know, build more and see the bigger picture of what it's good for you.
Standing on the sidelines, it's been like really exciting to see you on your journey. Mm. And one thing, you know, it's like you are super good at like spotting like new opportunities, or like the next big space in paddle, like corporate paddle, or now your more recent Anglo-American Cup. Like, how does that come about? Are people coming to you with opportunities? Is it your sort of oversight over, you know, lots of different countries, seeing multiple landscapes rather than us sort of in our UK bubble?
Yeah, I think I've always had an entrepreneurial streak, and I think previous jobs I've had, which I've needed to do, I've needed to kind of be institutionalized and work for big companies and like earn my stripes and earn the ways of doing things before jumping out on my own.
Yeah.
I've, you know, been constrained from doing that because I've been as we all are, big corporate companies. You know, when I was in anti-doping, I was part of a big, very regulatory watchdog for doping in sport. So good in so many ways. I had, you know, the time of my life and from a career perspective, but you're not going to be entrepreneurial there. You're doing a job for an organization. You're on a mission. I'm on the flip side now, where it's all risk and it's all your own doing and it's all your own growth. But I absolutely, you know, I'm relishing that. And it's come at the perfect time in my life where I saw an opportunity. That, I'll be really honest, 3 years ago when I did this, I was a freelancer. I was looking for what's my next sports contract. I was doing a contract for the LTA, in PR, doing a bit of PR for the British paddle team. And I was like, what's my next move? And then the stars sort of aligned where I thought, I'm meeting so many people investing and setting up paddle courts. This is a great opportunity. And I jumped in with 2 feet and thought, I have to do this and throw everything at it. And since then, I've seen opportunities along the way. So obviously, my day job is the PR marketing company, Paddle 22. But, you know, I haven't picked the timing of these other things. They've come along in quick succession. But I think just immersing myself in one sport and one industry, I instantly saw some opportunities to, create some IP, to create some new business ventures. One, property and paddle, which you're familiar with, you know, essentially positioning paddle as this new golf, as this new corporate networking glue to bring corporate professionals together through paddle. And that's been a huge success. We've had three events in the UK, two in the US, and we're bringing, business people together to mingle, to let their guard down and corporate network in their sports kit through paddle. And it's been a real success. And then we've just come off, you know, I'm just on a come down from the Anglo-American Cup, which was a big hit the weekend. And I can talk more about that. It was just, you know, it was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, how did the idea come about? Yeah, I mean, I've heard it termed as the Ryder Cup of paddle. So
that's where we want to go. Yeah. So I've got a friend in the US called Bill Ullman, who's from a squash background. He used to live in England. He knows a lot about, you know, he's played a lot of squash in the kind of the UK, US squash competitions. He pulled me aside at a paddle event in New York about 15 months ago. He said, "Ben, there's something I want to talk to you about." I thought, God, this sounds ominous. And he said, "I've got this idea. You know, there's a great history of UK versus US in sport. If you look at the America's Cup sailing, the Ryder Cup golf, Davis Cup tennis, it all started at Britain, America. And you look at GB and US and where paddle is, they're at similar stages. Britain's probably, although the US just won, but Britain's probably generally slightly ahead of the US in terms of its paddle journey. Why don't we recreate this, you know, Britain-America rivalry, but for paddle?" Within about 10 seconds, I was like, I'm totally sold. This is a great idea. I'm all in. And then we brought along Joelle Quinn as a third partner from a commercial background. So we had three of us with this great vision. We thought a great vision that we needed to execute. It's not easy.
No.
It is not easy. But, you know, what are the key things to find is to find a great supportive sponsor. We got Playtomic and Babolat on board, and they you know, really logical sponsors given their strategic interest in the UK and US markets. And we assembled the best players we could from the UK and US. And we just had an amazing competition, 64 players, 32 Brits, 32 Americans, a couple of the LTA number ones from this year. So we had Ellie Tate, we had Rafa Vega, Cameron Dolly, Dolly Moore, just amazing players. And it was a great celebration of British and American culture, of the best sport, of the team element. And look, we're not, you know, going to claim to have the Ryder Cup mantle by any means. They've spent decades building up that reputation, but I think it was as close as I've seen in paddle yet.
You've got to start somewhere.
And we had an amazing celebration of the team element. We had incredibly tight competition. You don't know year one where it's going to end up, but we had a two-day competition in North London. And we had, you know, the Americans were, to give you an idea, 25-15 going into day two. The Brits went storming ahead to, I think, 37-35. Then the Americans poked their noses in front, and it was all down to the last but one match. So we had 48 matches and the Americans won on the 47th. And it was kind of Ryder Cup-esque. It was very tense. And it was the biggest advert for what we were trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest team effort over 15 months to pull it together with volunteers, with a huge amount of dedication and a huge amount of vision for where we take it. So I think massive success story. I think we can grow it. We go to America next year.
Yeah.
And then back to the UK. All the players are raving about it. So I like to think we've created something really transformative.
Yeah, it sounds like you have. And actually, you've got 12 months to get your duck in a row, so we win that cup back.
I know. And it comes around quickly. So a lot of people actually saying, oh, every 2 years. And we're like, well, actually, we've said every year, which is a lot of work. But we want to build up some momentum. We want certainly to have one in the UK and one in the US. You know, maybe eventually it becomes every 2 years, because every year is, you know, Ryder Cup's every 2 years. But just to build up a bit of momentum and create a brand and a business out of it, we want to have, you know, in quick succession, one in both markets.
Mm.
So there's massive potential with it. I think it's really exciting. It was paddle, at its best, definitely.
And what have been like your top highlights from the Anglo-American Cup, like your standout moments?
I think I've explained, you know, why we set about doing this and the impact I think it will have on the sport. But there were a few moments throughout the weekend where I just sort of stepped back and just thought, that's why we did this. You know, there were moments where you had the players swapping shirts, having a drink together. There was the moments, you know, it's no surprise you had the Team USA huddle, a bit like the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
You know, they're a vocal bunch, the Americans. So them jumping up and down and celebrating the victory, moments like that, I was like, wow, it's so powerful to see that in person. And, you know, just creating these sort of transatlantic friendships, the players afterwards, like I say, swapping shirts and actually knowing that they're going to be in touch together. You know, next time one of them comes to the UK or one goes to the US, they're like, we're going to get in touch. So I think something far deeper than paddle happened. And I think actually connecting these people through a tournament that was once just a conversation, that's the most powerful thing to me.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're like really good at like connecting people within the space and like so that they're sharing best practice. And I know networking is another thing that you're heavily involved in, one through property and paddle. And secondary to that, you're Insider 22.
Yes.
Can you share a bit more about, you know, how that came about and what it's doing in the space for those that haven't heard about it?
Yeah, definitely. So that was one other well, it was an idea and it's now a business arm in itself. So I was, by kind of default, just introducing lots of people, and I love doing that. And I was, yeah, again, in this position, I feel like I'd kind of worked hard to earn this position of just knowing a lot of people. And I wanted to help and I wanted to put people together, whether it's investors looking for something in Paddle to invest in, whether it's people looking for investment, trying to find people with money, whether it's operators looking for land, you know, apparel companies who are looking for, you know, the next best designer, you name it. All of these people with a shared interest in Paddle who wanted to like make magic happen. I thought, I'm lucky that I'm meeting lots of them. There must be a way of bringing them under one digital roof. I'd seen, you know, to give you an example, there's a great sport business platform in the US called Profluence. And I thought there's a great need to create a Paddle, you know, version of this and bring all these business owners together so that we can have networking calls, so we can have, you know, masterclasses where you learn about how to secure sponsorship, how to create the best Paddle club, how to secure investment, these kind of practical things. And also just to get people networking and introduce them. And I thought if I can bring them together in a community, I can do that and I can make those introductions. So yeah, Insider 22 is exactly that. It's a membership platform. We're at about close to 180 members since the start of the year. We've got 22 countries represented, which is great. A lot of Brits, a lot of Americans, South Africans. It's very much, I call it the new Paddle world, and it's very much the new Paddle territories that can all learn from each other. And yeah, it's going really well. It's growing fast. People, you know, people have made business partners out of it. People have, you know, done business deals. People have become friends out of it. Wow. And that, to me, that's the magic. That's the bit I'm most proud of is, you know, if I can just be the starting point for people to do good things in Paddle, that to me is like a job well done.
Have you got any success stories you're allowed to share with us?
Well, I'm not going to name any names, but what I would say is there are people, you know, I had a couple of new members who joined in the UK. Let me tell you. So Philip Pereira, who I'm sure you know, you know, joined the community. And, you know, a week or so later, he happened to be going out to New York and he'd already met on a networking call. A couple of Dario Michelli and a couple of guys who are New York based members. They met a week later in New York and lo and behold, they're then doing a, you know, a story together for a Paddle magazine that's just launched there. And I thought that was brilliant. I'm not saying they wouldn't have met eventually, but they met quickly because they're both members of this community. And then they're going on to do, you know, some great journalism together and create ideas and come up with business ideas. And I thought that was a quick, you know, case study of what can happen.
Yeah.
And there's many more examples. Yeah. So it's going really well. I think there's a great future in it. And it's, you know, it's for a lot of people that maybe they don't want to or don't need to work with Paddle 22 as a business, but they, you know, they want to speak to me about who I can connect them with. And it's just a great way of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, like you mentioned, it's global.
Yeah.
And you are sort of working across the global landscape. So what are the key sort of differences you're seeing in different marketplaces to the UK?
I think it just in terms of, I mean, all countries have cultural differences. So you can't just think it's a one size fits all. Oh, I'm going to market something in a certain way or tell a story in a certain way. You've got to, like, you know, as much as we think, yeah, it's a globalized world, but actually they all have their different ways, different markets of doing things. So you've got to go in respectfully and understand like what's going to work in the UK won't necessarily work in another country. I would say, I mean, the main difference is they're just at slightly different stages of their journey. Mm. So we all know like Spain and South America, very established, you know, Italy, Scandinavia is quite established to the sport. But then I'd say, you know, you look at the next kind of tranche of European countries and you've got, you know, the Netherlands, France, then the UK, and they're all at slightly different levels of awareness of the sport. So if I'm looking at a stakeholder like the media, it's, you know, how complacent do you be of like, oh, Paddle, or how much do you need to be? This is what Paddle is and these are the stats and there's a new club being built every 2.5, you know, hours worldwide. And how much do you need to...
Is that a true stat?
It's a true stat. It's there we go. It's in the global play.
Say that
report.
Again.
There we go. A new Paddle club being built every 2.5 hours worldwide, which is amazing. And that's a stat I will use to grab, you know, the attention of a journalist and be like, this is worth paying attention to. And now let me tell you why there's something more to it. But I think it's really important. So to your point, I think you've got to have different, there's different education jobs to be done depending on the market. And that's the main difference to me. Looking at America where I do, you know, a lot of work, they're further behind with Paddle. So there has to be that job of, by the way, I know you're focused on pickleball, but here's the next thing coming down the track. So you've got to grab attention by those kind of numbers because it's, you know, it's kind of undeniable that there's an amazing, you know, cultural phenomenon coming down the way in America. And I think it's, but they don't know it yet. So you've got to education, really important. That's the main difference, I find.
And what are you personally hoping to achieve in the paddle world in the next few years? What's next?
Well, I did say this year would be a year of consolidation, and actually, like, to an extent it has been, but it's been like the businesses you just mentioned, you know,
property. I mean, you're moving too fast.
they've been growing and new events, and so it's, you know, there's new things that kind of spurn from that. But I would say, yeah, my big mission is to grow Brand Paddle, is to help you know, expose the sport across the new paddle world. So it is really showcasing what this sport is about, why it's the hottest property, not in, just in sport, but the hottest kind of cultural touch point across these countries it's now moving in. It's gluing society. It's matchmaking people through friendships, romances, business partners. That to me is the bigger thing, what it's doing in actual day-to-day society. I want to showcase that, and I want to get people excited and enthused around the sport. And you know, if I can play my part in doing that, that's my ultimate goal.
Yeah. And, I mean, the time has flown. Jess is waving at me to wrap it up. And it always does when the conversation's great. But, I mean, a lot of people that are starting out in paddle, we've noticed from us, they tend to be the people that tune in and listen to this podcast. So what sort of, top tips or advice could you give to someone that's looking to build a career in the paddle space right now?
Well, so one of my missions is, we haven't talked, is absolutely getting students and young people involved in it. I remember, you know, being a student myself and really having to, you know, get my qualifications. That was fundamental, but actually it was about networking. It was around like, building up my CV, building up a portfolio, and really throwing myself at it and just giving myself the best opportunity to get into the sport business industry. And I would say the same to young people. So, you know, anyone, and I've spoken to a lot of students, a lot of the university students who've set up paddle societies, big fan of what they're doing, because they're not only excited about the sport, they're being, you know, little business owners in their own right before they've gone into the business world. So love the fact they're setting up these societies. I would say knock on doors, do your research. Throw yourself voluntarily at things. You've got to build up the experience. You're not going to get the perfect, you know, perfectly paid job to begin with. Lots of us have been there and, you know, and really, like, you know, worked at it for years. So I would say, yeah, don't be shy. Just make opportunities for yourself. You know, take a gamble. You know, do work experience, do internships, all of those things. And also, you know, find ways of standing out. So make, you know, if you're writing an email to a company or someone you want to work with, don't do the, you know, the copy and paste. Make sure you like actually have done your research and say something which, you know, appeals to their ears. So show you've done your homework, show why it should be of interest to them as the recipient of an email. And I think just, take the time to stand out and make yourself individual.
Oh, thank you so much for so many valuable insights and for joining us. And if you've enjoyed today's conversation, you know what you need to do. You need to hit follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. Thank you.